This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. More than 60 million girls in the world are not in school. The reasons why can vary, from civil unrest to cultural and social factors. Today, Where We Live, we look at education in Afghanistan. The Taliban no longer controls the entire country, but when it did, girls 10 and over were forbidden to go to school. Shabana Basij Rasik was one of those girls. We'll hear her story this hour, including her work to co-found the first boarding school for girls in her native country. It's known as SOLA, the School of Leadership in Afghanistan. Now, what do you think are the repercussions when girls are kept from school across the globe? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Email wherewelive at WNPR.org. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Now, Shabana Basij Rasik joins us by phone. Shabana, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your background, Shabana. I understand you were born and raised in Kabul. When we look at a map, tell us where Kabul is and what it was like to grow up there.
Kabul is closer to the eastern side of Afghanistan. And in the past 15 years, it has grown from 700,000 people to close to 5 or 7 million. The statistics vary, but it has expanded rapidly. And most of it is Afghan refugees returning to Afghanistan from places like Pakistan, Iran, and elsewhere in the world. And a number of the people from provinces who come to Kabul to seek employment opportunities. So the city has expanded greatly in the past short few years. When I was growing up, Kabul was a very, very different place. I remember talking about how the days back then were so long. And I think mainly part of it was people were not allowed to watch TV, listen to music, were really isolated from the rest of the world. But for me as a young girl, we were not allowed to go to school. Women were prohibited from working outside the house. Girls were banned from going to school. And any of the families who did try to educate their girls basically were considered criminals by the government.
Now, you were 6 years old when the Taliban took over. You mentioned some of the rules that were in place. Was this under Taliban rule?
Correct. Yeah, these were under the Taliban. Prior to the Taliban regime, women did enjoy many more freedom. And for instance, my mother was a teacher before the Taliban regime. She started teaching when she was in 10th grade. In high school, mainly because back then there was such a need for teachers, especially for female teachers. So she was offered a job really in high school, and she has, she's taught for more than 40 years before she recently retired. But the rules that I'm talking about, where women were not allowed to go to school, to go to work, or girls were not allowed to go to school, really apply to the time when Taliban were in power from 1996 to 2001.
You mentioned your mother was a teacher. What about your father, and how did he encourage you?
My father was in the army before the Taliban and after the Taliban. My parents, with their backgrounds, working in the army and working as an educator, but in their personal lives, being the first in their families to go to school, my father was the first man or person to go to school in his family, and my mother was the first woman in her family, along with her sisters, to be allowed to go to school. And I think that makes me a very lucky girl in that, they have such a great appreciation for the value of education and what that can mean for a person, person's life and their future. And that when they were faced living under a regime like the Taliban, where they were basically told that educating four of their daughters would be considered a crime, they had to make a difficult decision. My parents sent me and my sisters to a secret school, and what I mean by a secret school is really sneaking into somebody's living room at various times so that we don't create a pattern every day. And, you know, the one that my sister and I attended was 40 minutes to an hour walk each way, and we were told every day by family and by the teachers at the school to make sure we walked different paths, going to school and coming back home, so that we avoided creating any kind of a pattern. Obviously, everyone who participated in this knew the consequences. If we were caught, in most cases, we heard stories, you know, horrific stories of some secret schools being discovered by the Taliban, where they beheaded the teacher, punished the students and their families. So even as a really young girl, you know, I knew that every day as I was walking to that secret school and coming back home, I was not only responsible for my own safety and the safety of my sister, but I was responsible for the lives of so many other girls who came to that secret school.
Now, Shabana,
and, you know, as a young person, that can weigh on you quite heavily.
Now, Shabana, when you and your sister went to that secret school, you also were in disguise?
Yes. So my older sister was old enough that she had to wear a burqa. And again, you know, the Taliban did not allow women to be walking outside alone. They had to be accompanied by a male family member. And in this case, really it was my mother who decided to dress me up as a boy so that I could accompany my sister to and from. This was the only way both of us could get an education, but also really minimize any kind of attention that we would get once we were outside the home.
How long did this go on, Shabana, and how did you have optimism during this time? Because every day you had to be fearful that you would get caught.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, I've had a lot of time now to reflect back on that time, but really when I was in that mode, you know, there were, you know, it really depended on the day. You know, I really did embody that persona. You know, it gave me a lot of freedom. Outside the secret school trip every day, I was allowed to be outside playing. I was, you know, I spent hours flying kites or playing soccer with my brother and his friends in the neighborhood. But, you know, there were times when we would walk to the school and feel like we had a very close call of, you know, being caught. And obviously that's a really, really scary experience when you know, when you hear stories about public executions, just to teach people a lesson. At that time, we knew that they were not joking about consequences. And so I remember coming home begging my parents to stop sending us to the secret school. You know, I get it really emotional talking about this every time, because I think my parents were incredibly brave in doing what they did. You know, we would say, please, there is no need for us to go to school. So many other girls in our lives, in relatives, in neighbors, don't take this risk. Why do we have to take this risk? Why is it so important? It's not like we can graduate from high school and go to college or university and get a job. So why bother? And, you know, my parents were incredibly gracious and patient in explaining the value of education. And I don't think I quite appreciated what they were saying then until several years later. But they would remind us that, you know, in life we could lose everything. You know, everything that we own can be taken away from us. We could lose it in a natural disaster, or we can be forced to leave the home that we own. But there's one thing that no one can take away from us, and that's, you know, the power of our mind, our ability to think for ourselves and to know, and that's the one thing that even the Taliban cannot take away from us. Mm-hmm. And I I think, think about it, it's so powerful, and right now I am where I am because my parents invested in us. But back then I had no appreciation for it. All I wanted to do was get out of it. And, I thank my parents for being persistent because, back then we didn't even have cell phones. And, every day my mother would send us to school not knowing if we would come home mm-hmm. at all. Or if we would come home alive. It's not like we had a set time by which we would get home. We had to keep a very random schedule. And I can't imagine what it took for her to be able to do this day in and day out.
This is Where We Live. I'm speaking with Shabana Basij Rasik. She's an Afghanistan native. She lives in New England, and she's the co-founder and president of SOLA, the School of Leadership Afghanistan. Shabana, everything changed in 2001. Do you remember what your father said when the Taliban was overthrown, when the U.S. invaded?
Yeah, I remember during the Taliban regime, my father owned this small gray radio through which he tried to listen to the news, BBC, World Service, and Voice of America, and whatever he could access. And, I remember every morning he would try to pay so much attention, and he did not like being disturbed during the morning news hour. But that particular morning when the Taliban were ousted from Kabul, my father had a huge grin on his face. It just even everything in our household was loud and happy. It was a very different mood, and I had just woken up. And I was trying to figure out what was happening. My father said, the Taliban are gone. I couldn't believe it, even though I was really young, but the 6 years living under the Taliban regime felt like the longest years of my life. I'm not sure why I felt that way, but I ran outside. I opened the door to the outside. And I made sure I kept all of my body inside the house and just, try to tilt my head outside and see if they were really gone. It was a very foggy morning. I looked to the right and left, and I made sure I was mostly inside because I was worried that somehow some Talib was hiding in a corner waiting to see my happiness and then try to kill me. And I saw nothing but just this beautiful, quiet, still morning. That it's one of my fondest memories of that morning. And I came back home, and next thing I was hearing cheers and celebrations, men pouring into the streets of Kabul, publicly shaving their beard. A lot of men and boys bringing out their, at that time they had cassette players, and all the music tapes that they had hidden from the Taliban, they would bring it out into the public and play it really loudly and dance, and women burning their burqas. It was a really beautiful thing, and I think the most beautiful part of all of this was anticipating going to public school. Because I had never been to a public school. All of my education up to that point was in a secret school. And then, a couple months later, the government announced taking an entrance exam from all female students because their records were burned by the Taliban. So they invited female students to go to school and take entrance exam into whatever grade level they felt comfortable. And I had just finished sixth grade, so I took that entrance exam and was placed into seventh grade. And when they were announcing the class, they divided students into groups of 60 or 70 students per classroom. Because I had scored at the top of the class, I was chosen as class representative. When my name was announced, I was trying to make my way into the front of the line mainly because I'm a short, petite person. I'm barely 5 feet, and the teacher looked at me and she said, "Oh," and the reason she was concerned was I was in a classroom where close to 97% of my classmates were 6 years older than I was, and that is the first time it really hit me what my parents had really done for us.
We're going to hear more about your journey into public school and then how you ended up here in the U.S. After a short break. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. I'm speaking with Shabana Basij Rasik, a New England resident. She's also co-founder and president of the first boarding school for girls in her native Afghanistan. We're going to hear more about that school. It's called School of Leadership Afghanistan, or SOLA. Today we're talking with Shabana about her work to help more young girls get an education in a country where very few have the opportunity. You can join the conversation too, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil.
Lately, there has been a wave of killings around Afghanistan, specifically targeting girls who study or women who work. Schools, teachers, and students are continuously targeted too, especially in the south of the country where the Taliban have a strong presence.
That was from a 2010 Al Jazeera report. Today, in 2017, the Taliban still maintain strongholds in regions of the country, including Helmand and Kandahar provinces. Now, how does this impact the rights of women and girls in Afghanistan today? We're talking about efforts to educate Afghan girls. On the phone with us is Shabana Basij Rasik, a New England resident who co-founded the first boarding school for girls in her native Afghanistan. It's called School of Leadership Afghanistan, or SOLA. At one point under Taliban rule, Shabana had to dress as a boy so she and her sister could go to a private or secret school under Taliban so they wouldn't find out. And eventually, after the Taliban was overthrown in 2001 with the U.S. invasion, she was able to go to school publicly. Shabana, how did you end up in the United States?
I was nominated for a scholarship program that was funded by the U.S. State Department, bringing about 40 students, 20 boys, 20 girls, from across Afghanistan to spend a year in various states in the U.S. And in the year, I was nominated for the opportunity by my school principal. I was told that around 4,000 students from across Afghanistan took the initial entrance exam. Then eventually it was narrowed down to a list of 40 students, 20 boys and 20 girls. And I came to the U.S. through that program. Very unfortunately, in 2010, that program was canceled. But the year I came in 2005, I was randomly placed with a wonderful host family in Wisconsin, where I lived for a year, went to a public school there. Then in 2006, I returned to Afghanistan for a year before coming back to the U.S., to actually Vermont, where I attended Middlebury College from 2007 to 2011.
What was the reaction of your parents who risked so much so that you and your siblings could attend school, this idea that you were able to go to the U.S. to study and get a degree?
Yeah. So I was the first person in my family to come to the U.S. For education. I have five siblings, and eventually they all came mostly to the New England area to study, and some of us have gone back. I have two siblings who are still students here in the U.S. Back then in 2005, I mean, when I was going through the process, the exam process, I had just started learning English in 2004, so really my family, all of us kind of, you know, didn't think I had a chance, at least not that year. Getting into the program. But I kept getting shortlisted to the next round, and, you know, the attitude that I held and my family held was like, well, maybe in the next round I won't be invited. And finally, you know, I got visa, and a date was set for me to travel to the U.S., and that's when, you know, my parents started getting feedback from, you know, the, you know, from nearby people, saying, you know, maybe she shouldn't go to the U.S. You know, at that time it was, you know, too early into the relationship between the U.S. and Afghanistan, and the fact that I was young, people expressed concern. And by the time my father heard all of that, you know, he basically said, you know, I haven't asked anyone for their opinion whether she should go or not. She's earned it, and she's going. And I came. You know, obviously they are very proud, but like most South Asian parents, they won't say it in front of me. but I know they are very proud, and I've heard my father tell other people most often that his biggest investment in life is the education of his six children. And I think he isn't just proud of our education, but he's continuously, you know, both my parents, my father and my mother, they've continuously made sure that we know and we remember that the reason we, you know, they invested in our education so much, and the reason that they have, you know, charted really a new path for all of us is so that we could put our education to good use. And that, you know, when, as we were getting educated, we were reminded that there were so many young boys and girls in Afghanistan who weren't given that opportunity, and that it was our obligation to make sure that we work on their behalf and that we change things for the younger generation of people.
Shabana,
and I think I'm very grateful for what they have done for us.
What was it like to come to the U.S.? You know, again, the war had started and been going on for a few years when you came here. What was the how did people respond to you?
Well, I was incredibly excited about the opportunity. You know, I came in, you know, my mantra was try new things, and I had a great experience as a result of it, and people were incredibly nice and warm. But I think where I was in Wisconsin, I was probably the first person from Afghanistan that they had ever been in contact with or had an opportunity to ask questions from. And so I ended up receiving a lot of very interesting questions from various people about the day-to-day life and what was happening in Afghanistan. But in this process, I was really quickly, you know, shocked and surprised how little people knew about Afghanistan. And I think I'm no longer shocked, but it still sometimes hits me that to this day, there's very little known about Afghanistan. The reporting coming to the U.S. about Afghanistan is so simplistic.
One misconception I was thinking of is so often people think of Afghanistan as all residents there holding the same beliefs as the Taliban, and this idea that men would encourage their daughters to go to school, that might sound foreign to some people.
That was a big shock for me. That, you know, that was particularly, you know, coming from a household where my father is my champion, you know, for my opportunities, you know. You know, when people interrupted, you know, my opportunity to come to the U.S. or tried to interrupt it, if my father could have easily said, oh, yeah, you are right, she shouldn't go. But, you know, he didn't even let that become a discussion. And so, you know, having that kind of a really supportive father figure, that came to me as a surprise. But, you know, I also understand that, you know, there are fathers, there are men in Afghanistan who aren't supportive, but the unfortunate thing is that they have dominated the perception or the identity of Afghan men, which is really not true. I mean, you know, I can talk about a number of fathers today who are the fathers of my student, who go through unbelievable you know, experiences to allow their daughters to come to school. In most cases, they receive threats to be killed if they continue to send their daughters to school, like Sola, to a boarding school. And yet, because they believe so much in the power of education, but in particularly what the Sola education could do for their daughter, they accept those risks and they continue to support their daughters to study.
You mentioned SOLA a few times, and we have to take a short break coming up, but we are going to hear more about the School of Leadership Afghanistan. Again, I'm on the phone with Shabana Basij Rasik. She lives in Massachusetts, co-founder and president of SOLA, the School of Leadership Afghanistan. We are talking with her today because of efforts around the world to get more girls in school. But today, of course, we're focusing on Afghanistan because Shabana is a native of that country. Coming up, we're going to hear more about how she is reinvesting back into Afghanistan through this school, SOLA. And we're going to find out her reaction and her perspective on the future of Afghanistan. This war now 16 years going strong, and with recent news that the Trump administration is allocating more troops to Afghanistan, we're going to get Shabana's reaction for what that means for her country. Shabana Basij Rasik again on the phone with me. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. First, if you listen to conversations on the show daily and you appreciate them, we ask you to support Where We Live. It's WNPR's fall fundraising campaign. Here are two of my colleagues to tell you how to support this program. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Did you know globally 65 million girls are not in school? That's because of a variety of reasons, including war or social and cultural factors. My guest today is Shabana Basij Rasik, and she knows what it's like to live under Taliban control. She dressed as a boy for several years while growing up in Kabul so she could attend a secret school. Today, Shabana is co-founder of the first boarding school for girls in Afghanistan. It's known as SOLA. Shabana, you told us that you're a graduate of Middlebury College. When did you decide to go back to Afghanistan and start the school?
I think in some ways, when I came to the U.S., I had never left Afghanistan. When I came to the U.S. and saw the difference in life and opportunities here versus there, I was incredibly surprised and shocked. And, you know, I think that experience alone really compelled me to focus my energy and skill sets on Afghanistan. You know, I figure that there are a lot of wonderfully talented people in the U.S., and the U.S. won't miss out on me. So I knew all along that I wanted to work in Afghanistan. But really, it was my freshman year when I found myself in this amazing school. And during orientation, the president of Middlebury said something along the lines of how only 2 or 3% of Americans are lucky enough to have access to that quality of education that is taught at a place like Middlebury. And, you know, there was a report from the UN that came out that year that said only 6% of women in Afghanistan, 6%, have a college degree. And I couldn't do the math for myself, you know, of, you know, on the path that I was. I felt so lucky, so privileged, that at times I felt incredibly guilty. And I think it was that feeling that really, you know, that's when I decided that I wanted to help young Afghan boys and girls gain access to quality education in a place like the U.S. so that they can also get a great education and return to Afghanistan and work there. And so that was really the beginning of the founding of SOLA. You know, in all honesty, I felt like this was going to be a side project, that I was going to have a different career, and that, you know, on the side, I would always support young people gaining access to great education overseas. But then by the time I graduated Middlebury and went back to Afghanistan, my co-founder, who is an American and who also lives here in New England now, at that time he lived in Afghanistan, an amazing human being. And he, you know, he and I initially started SOLA as a scholarship program. We worked with young boys and girls, help them get scholarship opportunities to come to boarding schools, mostly in the New England area because we had connections here with schools like Brooks and so on. And then help them get into colleges and universities before they return to Afghanistan. But when I returned to Afghanistan in 2011, I worked as a World Bank consultant with a rural development project for a year. And it was during that time working really in the public sphere in the Afghan government and focusing on the side project of ours. That's when I really realized that for me to put my education and skill sets to maximum use for Afghanistan was to become an educator. And I really surprised myself when I first considered myself an educator. And in thinking of, you know, what Afghanistan needed, I really wanted to turn our scholarship program into a boarding school, a full-fledged boarding school. Really, how, you know, this was such a perfect solution to so many problems facing girls even today. You know, in rural parts of Afghanistan, you know, the misconception here in the U.S. is that the number one reason why girls in Afghanistan don't go to school is, you know, traditional belief and, you know, men in Afghanistan not allowing girls to go to school. But the actual reason, which might surprise a lot of listeners today, is lack of teachers. You know, let that sink in for a minute. You know, lack of female teachers is the number one reason why girls in Afghanistan don't go to school. To give you an example, in a southern province in Afghanistan, out of 3,111 teachers in the province, only 16 are women. And out of the 16 teachers, only one has a high school degree. So it is really challenging for girls in rural Afghanistan to get an education. It's not to undermine the fact that, you know, other factors such as lack of security and, in some cases, traditional beliefs prevent girls from going to school. Oftentimes, you know, their labor at home, their help with their mothers at home is far more favored than their ability to study. But there are so many different factors, and the number one being lack of teachers in Afghanistan.
So, Shabana, what are you doing to address that shortage, including whether the teachers you hire are qualified to teach these young girls and boys?
Yeah. So, you know, when we decided to become a boarding school, it's an all-girls boarding school. And for me, the solution was to create a boarding school, was to create a school in an, you know, in a safe, nurturing environment in a place like Kabul City, and then provide a space for girls from rural parts of Afghanistan to come to Kabul and live in the boarding school and study. You know, we at the moment have 62 students from 15 different provinces in Afghanistan, and our goal is in the next 5 years to grow the school to hopefully the first phase 175 and eventually to 340 students from all 34 provinces in Afghanistan. But the key was to create a boarding school in Kabul where obviously the opportunities for girls and in general girls' education is far more accepted than it is in other parts of the country. And that has really allowed us to not only you know, minimize the security risks in some way, but also to draw on talented pool of teachers. And now what we do, we do hire young Afghan teachers who are who have recently graduated from university in Afghanistan, but we provide ongoing virtual professional development and e-tutoring and e-mentoring for the teachers and for the students. And so that's one way for us to really make sure that our teachers are able to teach up to the international standards, which is really a key for us. You know, we are really moving away from the memorization system that is so prevalent in our educational system to one that is really inquiry-based, student-centered, and allows and engages students in the classroom and outside of the classroom.
Shabana, I wanted to take a quick call. Amy's calling from Hartford. Amy, we have a couple minutes. Go ahead.
Hi, Shabana. It's Mrs. Fechter.
Hi, Mrs. Fechter. Great to hear your voice.
How are you, my love?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
I just wanted to say Shabana was a freshman year roommate of my daughter, Michelle, at Middlebury College, and from the very first time I met her, I knew that this young lady was going places. She was always a very determined, very bright, smiling young lady who had such an open heart. And Shabana, you say that you surprised yourself in becoming a teacher. I think you were a natural teacher all along. You were somebody who introduced me to your country, your culture, and those fantastic beans that you make.
Well, Amy, thank you for calling. So this is someone that you know personally, Shabana. I'm curious how many students SOLA has today. And we did mention earlier in the show, you know, certain parts of your native Afghanistan still dealing with not only the Taliban, but ISIS is now in Afghanistan. I mean, how does that threaten the work that you're doing?
We have 62 students in Afghanistan, and we have sent about 50 to 60 students abroad to the U.S. and six other countries around the world for education. And, you know, we're expanding at about 25 students every year in the next 5 years. You know, the work we're doing in Afghanistan, you know, it's the first and only boarding school for girls. It's, for me, the major focus is on really bringing this model of education to Afghanistan and making sure that our people in Afghanistan are able to take ownership of this kind of a model and really stand behind it to support it. You know, when we started, we had 4 students, and today we have 62, and, you know, that number is growing. For our current class of 6th grade students, 26 6th grade students, we had 472 inquiry forms completed. So there is a great desire in this education. It's not to say that our recruitment efforts are easy and seamless, but, you know, we do face a lot of challenges.
The challenges.
Most of our trips to provinces, you know, when we try to talk about, obviously the security challenges as we go to provinces, but when we talk about the model of education to, all girls, schools, principals in various provinces, oftentimes the very first reaction is that it is such a great model of education. Why is this not for boys? Why are you, investing in girls? And I think, you know, when I hear that, I say, you know, it's because of this kind of reaction that it has to be for girls, that, boys in Afghanistan, relative to girls, have much greater access to education. And so it's really important that we invest in girls. And you know, you, in the beginning of the show, Lucy, you talked about what are the repercussions of not sending girls to school around the world. And, you know, we talk about investment in girls' education from an economics point of view. It has the greatest return. You send a girl to school, you keep her in school, she marries later, she has fewer children, she has healthier children, and she makes sure that her children, boys and girls, get an education. And, you know, that cycle continues, and it's this beautiful ripple effect. In a place like India, for instance, if India were to send 1% more of its girls to school, their GDP will rise by $5.5 billion. So it's no longer just morally right thing or responsible thing to do to send girls to school or to invest in girls' education, but it's economically smart thing to do, you know, and our world needs it. You know, we all know, you know, we are in this, you know, we live at a time when, you know, there are so many problems around the world, from terrorism, from, you know, public health crisis or crises around the world. And the answer, quite frankly, to all of that is sending those 65 million girls around the world to school and making sure they stay in school.
I mentioned earlier that the war in Afghanistan, from the U.S. involvement, 16 years now, I believe the longest conflict the U.S. has been involved in. In late August, President Trump announced that he'd be sending an additional 4,000 troops to Afghanistan to help Afghan forces. Shabana, what do you see is the future for Afghanistan?
You know, you also mentioned earlier about people's perception or misconception that the majority of the country believes in Taliban or Taliban-like ideology. And, you know, obviously, as an Afghan, it's a big shock for me. You know, I think there was a moment very clearly that American public got a taste of how little people in Afghanistan support Taliban-like ideology. And this was when there was a conversation about signing the bilateral security agreement between Afghanistan and the U.S., the long-term engagement. And when previously the previous government was delayed that conversation and brought it up to the Afghan public, held a traditional jirga gathering of elders to discuss whether the Afghan government should sign such an agreement with the U.S., you had, you know, in long bearded, men with turbans unanimously agreeing to sign that agreement and why it wasn't, and asking why it wasn't signed sooner. And so that was a one moment where the American public got a taste of how many people across Afghanistan support U.S. engagement and U.S. involvement in the country. So similarly, you know, with the troops, I know that, most Afghans are reassured that, they are supported in their efforts to build their country, build the economy, take the risk at the moment that is needed to provide a long-term sustainable development for the country.
I've been speaking with Shabana Basij Rasik, co-founder and president of SOLA, the School of Leadership Afghanistan. Shabana lives in New England, and we appreciate your time to tell us a little bit about your initiative in your native Afghanistan. For our listeners, quickly, Shabana, where can they go to learn more about SOLA?
Yeah, they can go onto our website. It's SOLA, SOLA-Afghanistan.org. And there's a lot of information. We are a U.S. registered nonprofit organization. They can get in touch with us very easily through our website and through our Facebook page.
Shabana, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me, Lucy.
Our show is produced by Lydia Brown. Special thanks to Meera Viswanathan. Our technical producer is Kyone Wolf. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. If you appreciate where we live, now's the time to support this program. Here are two of my colleagues to tell you how.